I'm Janet Hill, and this is the third in the series called The Kaleidoscope in Your Hymn Book. And I take as a starting point, lost my book, a book by Alice Parker called Creative Hymn Singing. And in a seminar with her some years ago, I was really open to hymnody in a way that I never had been before. And her sort of basic philosophy is in that when we recreate the original style that the hymns were written in, then the words and the whole text and the tune and everything comes to life. Okay, so we're sort of playing one off the other here. On the first night, we talked about plain song hymns, where we expected to hear those, the kinds of sounds we expected to hear, the language, attributes of those tunes. Then last night, we talked about Psalter hymns, most especially the French Psalter, but also touching into English and German Psalters. Okay, we talked about the Reformation as being the major political religious event of this time, the invention of the printing press as being tremendously important in getting the new ideas out, both in terms of the Bible and in terms of music. The language now becomes the people's music and the problem of getting everything translated fast enough. And whereas we think of plain song being in monasteries or in cathedrals or very remote places, the Calvinist tradition, the Psalter tradition, we're thinking of generally small rooms. And in fact, in Holland, I've been in churches where it was a great, huge church, and they've just literally sealed off all but the middle part of it right here and have a very intimate sort of worship. Okay, and the effect then on the tunes when we get to printing and the people singing is that what was once very complex melody now becomes much more simplified. And let me show you very quickly. This is the sort of, the sort of notes that people would have seen in their hymn books in the 16th century. Notes would have looked like this, as opposed to these. Like, although this is much more complex, you notice we only have one word here in all of these notes. The actual kind of notes is rather similar, isn't it? And this time, still doesn't give you very much clue to what the whole sound will be like. We also noticed that the parts weren't written on top of each other, but each part was written by itself. So here'd be the bass part. And here's the tenor, which in this is where the tune is. Okay, the other really interesting didn't matter what country you were in, the tune in part music was always in the tenor voice, never in the soprano voice, never in the top voice. And further, that these arrangements in parts were never sung in church, only just the melody. And that the melody was never accompanied. Okay, tonight we're going to start looking into our own Lutheran tradition, and we're going to find that nearly all of these things are still holding true that we talked about last night in Psalter hymns. I think there's one really very exciting difference in the Lutheran Reform movement as opposed to the Calvinist movement, and that is in Luther's regard for music. The other reformers saw music as potentially dangerous and something that had to be kept very, very tightly in hand. And in the Calvinist churches, only psalms were sung, and only just the tunes, of course. The organs were not played during worship. They were there for the edification of the townspeople, the musician being hired by the town to play recitals. But in the Lutheran tradition, Luther saw music as a gift of God to his people. And it's sort of, it gets turned around back. It's a gift of God to the people to give back to him in praise. And when I first read that, I thought that was a really, really neat concept, that God gave us a gift that we could give the gift back to him. And when I originally thought about titles for this series, in fact, that's what I had thought, that one week I would talk about God's gift to his people, the music, and the other week, which is actually this week, how we give the gift back to him in how we sing hymns. So Luther had a really open attitude toward music and all of the arts and welcomed them into the church. And so very soon in Lutheran worship we find not just psalm singing, but hymns, all kinds of music, instrumental music, organs, things that were not found in any of the other traditions at all. And I think if there's one, maybe one unique thing that Lutheranism has added to the great body of Christian music, it's probably this attitude toward music as God's great gift to his people to give back. And the chorale then as the chief vehicle for praising God by the people. Also somewhat unique in Lutheran worship then is that the hymn was as important a part of the service as the sermon, as the prayers, as any other part. It was just a given part of the worship. And in the Roman tradition and even in the Episcopal tradition, which kind of came directly off of that, the hymn singing mostly took place in services other than the communion service, in morning prayer, evening prayer, and that sort of thing. And so even in those traditions where they have much hymn singing now, originally it came in sort of by the back door through these other services. But for Luther, hymn singing, straight from the beginning, was a welcome part of the communion service. Okay, so tonight and tomorrow night, both, we're going to look at the chorales and different ages of chorales, where they came from, how they changed. And this is, I think, a really fascinating thing about all hymnody is how it's changed over the years. And tonight, I want to look especially at where the chorales came from. Okay, we have really about five different sources of chorale music. And one of them is an absolute direct link back to the Gregorian music. And I'd like to show you, if you'll turn please to hymn 168. I'm sure most of you know that Luther, in his translations, set the whole of the Eucharist, the communion service, into chorale form. In fact, maybe in some of your churches you've sung the Luther chorale service instead of the first or second or third setting. He himself was, of course, a composer, and composing in those days didn't necessarily mean to start all over and take something fresh out of your mind. Composing might as well have been taking a snippet of something from somewhere else. And in fact, Luther was quite a master of this. Luther, a monk, well in knowledge of the Gregorian chant, rather just adapted it. And this Kyrie, God the Father, then comes directly from plain song. Now, I'm not going to ask you to sing the plain song, but maybe I'll sing just a little for you. I'm not a great chanter, but see if we can sort of follow along. Kyrie. That little snippet right in there is almost precisely this same tune that you see here. But what has Luther done to make it easier for the people? He not only changed the words. Pardon? A syllable to every note, but how many words are in here? Kyrie eleison, right? But notice in here we have Kyrie, God the Father in heaven above, you abound in gracious love of all things, the maker and preserver, eleison. Okay, so he added a whole bunch of extra words in there, didn't he? And the German words, I guess, are probably relatively the same as this. So he used the same tune. He also made a specific rhythm out of it. because we don't really, there's nothing that says anything about rhythm in this one. It would be just by the monks or the choir, whoever was singing, would just kind of sense that all together because they had done it 10,000 times. They could manage all of that. But Luther was so interested that everyone participated in this. And a lot of these people were new. They had never sung these things before. And we had the translation problem, and he wants to get this all going. He used this same tune, which probably the people had heard. So it was not an entirely new tune, but they had probably never sung it. Added extra words, put a rhythm to it, and voila, we have a new chorale tune. Have any of you ever sung this in here? Wow, that's got to be unusual. Probably most parishes, including my own, which is fairly adventuring in hymn singing. See, this is tremendously formidable. A three-page hymn? You got to be kidding, folks. Okay.
We got a quartet together and did it on Reformation
Sunday. Uh-huh.
So the congregation didn't sing
it. Uh-huh.
It was more like an anthem.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, when we were talking about plain song singing, we said that one of the real barriers to plain song singing is the organ. Okay? Because the monks in the monasteries did not sing accompanied by organ. In fact, they didn't sing accompanied by anything, probably. And so these beautiful, complex melodies could evolve, and they would just be so in tune with each other that very subtle things in their singing would happen that you couldn't possibly write down. Okay. So one of the barriers to plain song singing is the organ. Keep in mind also that these tunes were still being sung without accompaniment. And I say to you that I think the organ becomes a barrier to singing them. And we'll see this right on through, I think, tonight. So let's try just a little bit here and see how we can make it sound. I'll give you a starting pitch, however. Okay. Well, let's just see how it goes. Ready? Sing. Kyrie, God, Father in heaven above, you abound in gracious love. Of all things the maker and preserver, eleison, eleison.
Not really too formidable, is it? I can think of many other tunes in this book that are a lot harder than that. But it's generally, I think, regarded as just not anything that could possibly be useful, let alone meaningful. But let's try it again now. And thinking about this plain song background, it's kind of listen to each other, listen to the words. You abound in gracious love, not gracious love. Sometimes I think we think of the German Luther, the whole German mentality is kind of like this, and we got to kind of hold on tight. And I think we kind of lose the sight of the style of singing in this century, of this style of music, and the dance music and all those things that lighten things up. We don't really have to kill it, and we can just kind of sense it together. And I think, again, the organ helps to bring this sort of feeling about it that we don't really need. Let's try it again. Okay, just that much.
Ready? Second part of the communion service, the Gloria in Excelsis, likewise came directly from a plain song tune. This is hymn number 166, maybe a tune you're much more familiar with. Okay, now this part of the tune right here was the German for the chorale. It goes right in here. In fact, just from here down to here.
Et in terra propax hominibus, a glory be to God on high.
And that's right where it came from. Okay.
We can't deny our Roman roots. We really can't. Do you all know this tune or sort of? I'll even play this time because this is one of my favorites. Okay, here we go. Ready? This is the setting of the whole Gloria in Excelsis, Glory be to God on high. Okay, so one of the sources then of our chorale heritage comes right straight from Gregorian chant, and there are many, many, many tunes. This is just two of them. Okay, also from the Gregorian tradition are these office hymns, like from evening prayer, morning prayer, all the various offices. And one that we explored in our talk of Plainsong was number 472. But why don't you turn to 473 for the moment, and I'll show you the originals here. Okay. Now, maybe you never knew that hymn 472 and hymn 473 are the same tune. I mean, it's not only the same text, it's the same tune. But if you compare, what happened in 473? Pardon? Okay, we got four parts printed here, which probably in Luther's time, he still would have had just the tune. But when you look at that four parts, you can see the verticalness of it, can't you? And when you look at 472, it's pretty strictly horizontal, isn't it? Okay, what can you also tell me about the number of notes? I'm sorry, can you speak? Right, there are like quarter notes and steady notes, and in 472 we have eighth notes, which in terms of Gregorian chant really didn't mean anything at all, but in just looking at it, which of these two versions has the most notes? 472, doesn't it, in terms of just the melody? Many more notes. So, for instance, on 472, we would sing, "Come, Holy Ghost, our souls inspire." The same line on 473 becomes, "Come, Holy Ghost, our souls inspire." Yeah? But it's the same tune, isn't it? Yeah. And Luther, I think, as I understand it, would have said, okay, in your big city churches there where you've got lots of resources and you still have your Latin choirs intact, sing the 472. But for you folks that are just becoming acquainted with these tunes, and out in the parishes, and you don't have any resources, you don't have your choir director and your organist doesn't sing in Latin anymore, you all sing 473 because I want you to experience this wonderful text. Okay? So that's where these things came about. And I don't want to imply in any way a better or worse. They had different functions, and we're lucky to have them both. And we're lucky to have them both. Okay, so then also chorale tunes came to us from the office hymns. Another source of hymns that I think is just a great addition are songs that were called cantos. There were medieval Latin hymns, but not used in church. And there are two that are especially fun in the hymnal. One you know very well is In Dulce Jubilo, Come Christian Friends Rejoice, Sing a Christmas Tune. And this is a very, very old tune that has many, many sources, but was not a church tune. In church, and it was one of the outside ones. They'd sing in processions and at celebrations outside the church. But what I'd like to look at tonight is number 68. And this tune is just great fun. But it looks formidable.
my parish, formidable means if it goes on longer than three lines. And this one goes on three pages. Okay, again, if we strip away all these harmonies, I think we'll find a very singable tune. Okay. Now notice also, it has it marked in the beginning the first 2.5 lines for the congregation suggestion. It's like a serving suggestion on the food packages, you know. Okay, and then down on the middle of the third line, it says choir. And then over on the third page is the congregation again. Okay, this is known as the Quempas Carol. The Quempas, Q-U-E-M-P-A-S Carol. And the Quempas Carol comes from the Latin words quem pastores. And that's the song about the shepherds and etc. And the tradition of this tune is really dear. I have this also comes printed in a piece of for choir music, which it has been around longer than it's been in the hymnal. The Quempas goes round. And this was a tradition and that goes back to medieval times and still persists. The Quempas goes round describes a beautiful Christmas custom which dates back to the Middle Ages. At midnight on Christmas Eve, when the congregation had assembled for worship, four groups of children proceeded to the four corners of the church to announce to the congregation from north, south, east, and west that heaven's all-glorious King is born. As soon as they reached their places, group one began to sing the first phrase of the Quempas Carol. That's where, right here at the beginning. Okay? Followed by the second group singing from another corner, and then the third line, and then the fourth line. So it came from all the different corners. Okay, after the fourth phrase, the mixed choir sang the first stanza of the Nunc Angelorum, and that's the part where it says choir. Nunc Angelorum says, and now the angels got into the act, and they had their say. So then the choir would sing this next part in here, probably in four parts, probably not with the tune on top. It probably was in the tenor. Okay, but in any case, the choir would sing the next part. And then, while they were doing that, the children switched places. Okay, so that each verse they sing comes from a different place. Okay, then after the choir sings the part called Nunc Angelorum, then the congregation joins in the refrain, which is on the third page here, God's own son is born a child. And this is the tradition then of the Quempas going around. And it was sung not only on Christmas Eve, but on Epiphany, on Twelfth Night as well. No one knows how old the Quempas is. A few handwritten copies of the Latin are extant, which come from the Middle Ages. A copy in southern Bohemia from 1450. And the three carols have been joined together from as early as 1543. Etc. It also says that during the Advent season, the children also would make Quempas hefta or books, Christmas carol books about the Quempas carol. So this was maybe like Advent calendars or something. So this Quempas carol was a real integral part of Christmas celebration in the Middle Ages and in all times since. And I think maybe they put it in the book here that maybe this could be sort of brought back. We've tried it in our church and it was a lot of fun. It really was. Have you done it too? Yeah. Did you do it with children in the choir and that? Did they move around and all that? Yeah, it's fun. Okay. First part's not hard at all. So let's us just sing it and we'll forget all about the harmony that makes it hard. And we'll just sort of sing along. And we'll imagine now that we're four groups of children and each line is being sung from a different corner. Okay, here we go. Sing. Correct. And we'll pretend now that we're the four-voice choir, and then thereafter we're going to shift positions again and meet the congregation. And you keep in mind, if you're sitting in church on Christmas Eve, this is really the only part you have to sing. Okay? Here you go. This is the part of the glorious angels. Go.
this wouldn't need to be a real formidable undertaking if you enlist your choir and your kids and let them do a part, and you can all join in this tradition. And the neat thing is, in the Calvinist and the other Reformed churches, this tune could never have happened, because this would have been one of those dangerous secular tunes out there that might corrupt the people. But in Luther's view, music is a gift of God and to be enjoyed. And we have that tradition, and now all the church does. All the church, even the Calvinist churches, they have it too, you know. So this was a really unique contribution. Okay, where else did these tunes come from? Religious folk tunes. Sound like our own day, doesn't it? Although I'm essentially more at home with these sorts of tunes, I'm not uncomfortable with folk tunes, with guitars in church. I really am not. As long as the text says what we're trying to say, and the people that are doing it with their full spirit. And, you know, time will take care of whether it should be in the hymnal in the year 2000 and in 2500 or whatever. I don't have to worry about that. But religious folk tunes being taken into the liturgy and into worship was there from the beginning. And Luther wasn't afraid of those tunes. He didn't say, oh, this is going to corrupt our young folks. But he was worried about the word. He was worried about the word. Okay, religious folk tunes from the year 1500 or sometime. Let's look at 317. This is one of my very favorite tunes, and a tune that I never knew until about, it's been almost 10 years now. My husband, Kent, had a sabbatical, and we spent it in Cologne, West Germany, to study organ, both of us. And while we were there, we met lots of remarkable people, but we met a very remarkable pastor and his wife, and they were in Cologne, and they were just about to retire now, and they had fled from Danzig over in that area to the Cologne area at the time of the Second War. And we were talking about hymns, and I had always thought, chorales, German chorales, one little box. And we were talking about chorales, and I had said, I had heard this tune in church, and I thought it was so lovely, and I had never heard the tune before. And she said to me, you know, actually, I find this tune really very difficult. I thought this was such a simple and very beautiful tune, and so uncomplicated. And she said, well, you know, actually, I find this tune very difficult, because where I come from, as a child, we were most accustomed to singing tunes like How Brightly Shines the Morning Star, and you know, and it's all over. It's rhythmic. It's all over. It's a big, wide range, much more complex tune. And so this tune, which appeared to me to be really very, very uncomplicated, was to her complex because of her whole background. And at that time was the first time I really realized that you can't just lump chorales into one little box, because there were northeast, the northwest, the south, and the ones in the middle and the south, and their traditions were as distinct as they were from French or the English or that. And so I don't know exactly where this tune came from, but I find it to be a really very, very beautiful tune. And we can notice one thing in here that I noticed, and I've never read, so I don't know if any scholars have ever noticed this thing or not, but the very often in chorale tunes, in their rhythmic forms, the tune will go along in a particular rhythm. It might be a fairly rhythmic, bouncy rhythm, or it might be a very quiet rhythm, such as this. But somewhere along in the tune, all of a sudden there'll be a dramatic change in the rhythmic makeup of the tune. And at that point, even coming through the translations, at that point there usually is a very key theological principle that comes through. Now notice in this one, the first two lines are almost all half notes, aren't they? It's just almost white on the page. And all of a sudden, on the third line, it jumps into quarter notes. So we have, to God, the Holy Spirit, let us pray, make of all for faith, most of all for faith upon our way. Now here comes the hot line. That he may defend us when life is ending, from exile home we are winning. And in each verse it goes through this. Sometimes it doesn't go through in all the verses. But the theological point gets driven home by a dramatic change in the tune. How many of you know this tune? Okay. Notice also at the very end of the tune, we have, Lord, have mercy. And in the German hymn books, they just sing Kyrie Eleison. And they kind of retain just from the folk hymn, this little refrain. But we're given, Lord, have mercy, which puts the unaccent on the accented syllables. We have to be careful not to bang that. Why don't I play it once so you can hear the tune a little bit, and then we'll do it once without the piano. Now, when we sing this tune, we have to kind of work to keep the line going, because this is sort of slow moving. It kind of just floats about this high up off the floor, and work at it just a little bit, and then the tempo just picks up on that third line. Ready? Without the piano. But now you really have to keep the sound going. Huh? You can't punch the notes out, and you just have to just float along. I love it. Okay, folk tunes. That was a folk song. Now, Luther also, not only did he take religious folk tunes, but secular folk tunes. Really, really dangerous stuff, folks. Okay, let's look at 282. And not just innocent little secular tunes either. I mean, this tune, O Welt, ich muss dich lassen, O World, I must leave you, originally was a lament of a lover who had to leave town. Okay? And it's been transformed, this is not the original text, but was transformed into a text about our yearning to be in heavenly Jerusalem instead of back in town with a, you know. So Luther was not afraid of these tunes at all. Now this is one of these tunes that's a bit rhythmic, and I find it really is easier to sing it without the piano, without the organ. It kind of burns it down. So let's just sort of try it here without anything. And it also takes on sort of a chant effect. Okay, ready, sing. Lovely tune. And also one of the dearest of all, 116. I think was originally a tune about heart palpitations, you know, in love and all of that stuff. Also a very old tune. Now this is one of these tunes that you get a bang when the rhythm changes. Notice the first two lines sort of rock along kind of like a lullaby, and on the third line all of a sudden the rhythm straightens out, and then on the fourth line it goes back to the sort of lullaby rhythm again. And I don't think in this translation it carries through on all the verses, but I think especially on the first. I don't know if that's an accident or if that was planned or if it's just my imagination, but That's sort of, that's my only original thought in this whole thing.
117 has that same rhythm in the third line that the 116.
That's right. But we don't have the other rocking rhythm, do we? And so when you sing the straight rhythm, you don't get that point, do you? And again, they had different functions at different times in history, so I'm not saying one's better than the other. It's just something I've noticed, and I'd like you to experience that again. I will say, if you're not accustomed to singing this in the more rhythmic version, you have to be a little bit careful on the end of the second line, because you've got four counts on this long note, and then we've got a rest to breathe in. And sometimes, if you're not aware of that, you get ready to go on to the next line, and it's not quite time. Okay, here we go.
Notice how this sort of gently rocks along. Ready? Happens. Also notice, I love on the last line, I joy to call thee mine. And when that note's longer, you have to kind of, you have to deal with that word there. I joy to call thee mine.
Yes, okay. The tune is the same person and date on both. Is it back here where it tells what they changed the...
I don't think it does tell back there. It was, yeah, they give you the same tune and the same composer, even though the rhythm was changed. Depending on what year's version we're putting in. So Hostler then was responsible for the tune. And in the back there, it should tell you who the arranger was.
Well, it doesn't say anything. It just talks about the text. It doesn't talk about the music.
Yeah. And tomorrow night, I'd like to see then where this further goes when you get to J.S. Bach. It's really interesting how tunes went from the form on 116 to the form on 117 to the harmonies of J.S. Bach over a period of 200 years or whatever. And I find it really fascinating. Yeah, we're getting up to a time here. Okay. So we had then tunes that came from the Gregorian tradition. We had the medieval unison hymns that were church songs but not sung in church. We had religious folk tunes. We had secular tunes that were taken in. And then lastly, of course, linked to what we talked to last night, the Psalms. And I think maybe we'll just do one more because it's hard when they have worship coming in at 8 to... So let's look at the Grand 80, 228. We can't go by without doing that. 228. Now again, I don't want to say in any sense that the rhythmic version is better than or not as good as the straight version. I'm just saying they were products of different times and different traditions. And one of the things that will make 228 go will be doing it without the piano, without the accompaniment, because this is the way Luther himself would have heard it. Okay? So, how many of you have sung this rhythmic versions in your parishes at all? Some? Good. Now, in this one, also has this phenomena of the change of rhythm. Can you see where it happens? Okay, it starts out in a rather jerky rhythm, so we're going to look for a big change from that. Yeah. Actually starts at the end of the second page, first line, doesn't it? And it goes then through that whole next line. And then it goes back jerky again, doesn't it? Okay. Okay, got to sit tall for this one. You can't sit back. I think also when we do this in the rhythmic form, we kind of lose the same thing that we know. We've got to do it like this. It becomes much more lyric when we do it this way. It's not such a battle song. Okay, here we go. Ready, go. Of this, can you? I always get a bang out of asking Sunday school kids, who's it talking about in this first verse? On earth he has no equal. And they say, God! It's wrong. Oh. And finally they come out, this is the devil. So you can't just sing one verse of A Mighty Fortress unless you do the last. So let's sing the last. Okay, why don't you stand? You've been sitting a whole hour here. And so park your feet on the floor and bounce from your knees. Okay, ready? Last verse, sing. God's word forever shall abide. No eyes too close to fear it. For God himself is by our side with weapons of the Spirit. If they take our house, good strength, child or spouse, grandchild. Okay, thank you all. Come back tomorrow night for the second installment of the Lutheran Chorale, the OK Chorale.